I think we're going to go ahead and get started. A couple people may still come in, but we'll go ahead and get started. So I'm going to just start by praying together. So let's bow our heads together. Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much for this time together and just for the health that you give us and the bodies that you give us, and that you just continue to prepare us and grow us and grow us as we learn how to take care of those around us and to love those around us well. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so we're going to get started here. And I wanted to start by sharing a couple verses. So the theme of today, the topic of today, is all about just kind of first aid, but also preparing for the unexpected. And that can look a lot of different ways. And mean a lot of different things. So today the goal is to prepare you with some basic skills, to be ready for the unexpected, but also just kind of more of just a spirit of readiness too for whatever might happen next. So I did put out little handouts on each table, and you can send them out later too. But basically, on the first part, I put three P's. And the first P was prayer, the second to put on peace, and the third for practical preparation. So with prayer, so why I put these three P's is it's kind of how you approach, like, should approach any situation, really, is first with on your knees in prayer. Because you never know what's going to happen. You never know where you'll be. And each day, you want to commit that day and whatever the unexpected to the Lord. And before I go to the next one to put on peace, I'm going to read a couple verses. So in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, this is one of my favorite verses. It's like my life verse, I feel like. I think the whole Bible is my life verse. But this one in particular, the Lord has used in a lot of ways in my life. And it's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, and it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths," or make your path straight, depending on which translation you use. And this verse just really, it calls us to trust, no matter what's going to happen, because in life there's so many unexpected things that we don't know what will happen. The next verse that I put on the paper is Proverbs 21:5. And it says, "Good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty." This verse speaks to being prepared, but also in the next verse that I included, Proverbs 16:9, it says, "We can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps." So these two verses are from different parts in Proverbs, but both of them speak to like the importance of preparation, but also the importance of surrendering the plan to the Lord. Because we can make a lot of plans and we can be the most prepared person in the world, but yet be met with something we have no idea what to do in. So it really calls us to trust in the Lord no matter what, no matter what's going to happen. And the final verse I included is Jeremiah 29:11. "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope." And then it goes through verse 13, and it says, "Then you will call upon me and go and pray to me, and I will listen to you. And you will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart." And I love, a lot of times when I was growing up, I learned that first part of the verse, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord." There are a couple different versions, but that's the one I had memorized. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord." And I like heard that over and over growing up. I went to a small Christian school and heard that over and over. But the last part says, "And you will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart." So kind of like the really basis and importance of like the preparation is really being founded on the foundation in the Lord and on our knees. And from that, we can prepare practically. So getting into it, on the very first page, it talks about a first aid kit. We're going to look at that at the end, so we're kind of going backwards first. But on the next page, it goes through kind of some pictures of CPR. And so I don't really have any PowerPoints today because I kind of want to help you to visually think about it. And also kind of another caveat is that while I'm personally certified, I'm not certified to like teach CPR. So I'm going to explain it to you and give you practical explanations in how you do it, because anybody can do it and anybody should be prepared for the unexpected. So on the pictures that I included and that I can send out as well, it goes through the different ages too, because, you know, as a person grows, you go from small to big. So I got my little baby here, dressed quite cute. So small to big. So if you're doing CPR on a little one, you're going to use less force than you would on someone who's bigger. Now, kind of starting at the basics, like what is CPR and why do you do it? And in what situations might you use it? And CPR is all about, basically, it's resuscitation of someone who has passed out and is unconscious for some reason, but their heart isn't pumping as it should. And this can be done for those where, basically, it's done in those situations where you find someone, you've checked, and you're, like, looking for the pulse, and we'll get into the specifics of how you do it, but it's always unexpected. It's not like usually, anyways. There are some different situations. Maybe the person has a history of different conditions and things where it would, you might be encountering it more frequently. But honestly, in life, you never know when it's going to happen. And so being prepared with the skills, it's always be ready for the unexpected. So on the pictures, I don't know if I have it right in all of them, but what I kind of want to show you is this one here on this page with a little one here. So kind of going to go through a scenario, and we'll start with the infant and then we'll go bigger. So I've got my little infant here. And for some reason, the baby is unconscious and you've checked the pulse. And when you're checking a pulse, honestly, CPR is a lot about doing it quickly. So in a child and an infant, it's more important to start quickly. You've, like, called their name, and for a baby, you, like, tap their feet. You're trying to say, hey, hey, are you okay? Are you awake? Like, what's going on? And you've called their name, and they're not responding. In a kid or a baby, that means, like, I got to act fast. Now, when you're checking the pulse, like, on someone who's smaller, often the better place is called, like, the brachial pulse. So it's like their arm. It's like they're doing their strong arms, and it's right here, kind of like they're doing their muscle. You would check it over here. And when you're checking, you're going to put, like, two fingers there. Now, you're checking it for 5 seconds or less. And if you're not feeling any pulse, then you're going to go ahead and start CPR. At the same time, you're, like, looking to make sure that the scene is safe, anything that could be obstructing or causing harm to the baby, or maybe why the infant is like this, like it's happening in this way. So you're going to move anything and make sure that nothing's on top of them. And then for the baby, it's very similar with older too, but you're going to use two fingers. So we've got infant less than 1 year, you're going to use two fingers. Now, when you start to get bigger, then you use more. So you, if you think of the chest, right, you've got something called the sternum, and then on the very bottom of the sternum, you've got like the xiphoid process. And you don't need to know all the lingo or anything, but like, you kind of want to know when you're judging, like, where do I put my fingers or my hand? And so usually a good rule of thumb is in between the two nipples of the baby, and then you're, or as you get bigger, then you're using the same thing. You're just going to use more. So for the baby, you would start with two fingers, and the baby's lying flat, right? You don't want to be holding the baby up and doing it, because it's not going to be as effective, because their head is probably wobbling around. And that's not good, as it causes more issues. So the baby would be lying flat, and then you would use two fingers, and you would start to compress. Now, you're probably stronger than you think, especially in like a scary situation. Your adrenaline's running. So you do want to depress, but you don't want to go so far that like you could break something. So you're going to push down and firm, down and up, and you do 30 compressions. And you're going to go basically like you're counting, and there's different tips and tricks that I will also put on the sheet, too, so that you can see. But basically, you're going to count, and you're going to go from a rate from about 100 to 120. So you'll be like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then you get up and to a certain amount. You get 30, so you count do for 30, and then you can give two breaths. Now, there is such a thing as if it's not your child and you encounter, like, or it's not, maybe it's a older person or something and you don't feel comfortable giving the two breaths, it's like a stranger. There is called something hands-only CPR. So compressions are super important because what it's doing is basically your heart, something's happening for some reason and it's not pumping as it should. So the compressions are trying to stimulate it, stimulate and help kind of knock that heart rate and rhythm back into what it should be. Now you're going to continue this and start this at the same time as hopefully you have someone that's near you or hopefully you have maybe a cell phone too that you're calling 911 if you can. Sometimes in different situations it's not possible, so you're going to continue this as long as you can without help. And then when help comes in, usually they'll bring like a defibrillator depending on the situation, and that would help knock the rate and rhythm it back if you're not able to stimulate it just with compressions. But compressions are very, they found it super effective, even if you're not able to get that breath in. But when you do the breaths, you're going to take the baby's head and just kind of head tilt, and you want the chin to lift. So the chin's lifting, and why you're doing that is because it's opening the airway. And so, because their airway would be blocked if it's down here, and you're going to give them mouth to mouth, you would give them breaths that way. So it's 30 compressions to two breaths. So that's just a very brief explanation. Now, if you think, oh, they're getting older. Okay, so now you've got a child greater than 1 year to about 8 years. And depending upon the weight of the child, you're doing the same thing, but instead of two fingers, you're going to use your palm. And if, depending on their size, you may just be able to use the palm, but if not, then you're going to interlock your hands. So you've got like, one, I'm right-handed, so I would use my right hand and then interlock the left over the top. So that way it creates more force. Now the person, the child, the baby will be on the floor, hopefully, or flat surface, depending upon the situation. And there are all kinds of crazy things that happen in life, and you're going to get it to the safest space possible so that way you're able to do it effectively. And when you're doing it, you want to basically... You're not wanting to, like, fully lock your arms, but pretty much you're going to keep them kind of soft, and you're going to be able to go up and down that way to use your body force so that you're kind of rocking back and forth. So the same thing applies when you get older. It's still the 30 compressions to two breaths or continually doing the compressions until you get more help. And a couple of things I think I included on the back, but if not, I will add it later, is that here, especially, like, the number is a little bit different. It's 191, and then for the 911, and then there's another number to call, too, if that one's not getting you who you need, for foreigners, at least. If you're Thai, it's a little bit different. But, so that one would help you get help when you need it. Now, moving on, I have more specific written-out instructions, too, that kind of remind you, like, hey, this is how you should position, how you should keep your arms, and it also helps, too, with the baby. If you have, you can do the two fingers, but you can also surround their, so they're, like, right in front of you. It's like they're looking at you, and you can surround it like you're cradling them with your two thumbs and do it that way, and that's effective as well. And then you're just pushing up and down gently to help stimulate the blood flow. Now, that was really brief. Because, again, this is not like a complete certified CPR training. It's just to help get you, like, prepared for the inevitable. Because anybody can do it. And anybody can be ready for it. It doesn't have to be someone who's a healthcare professional. And honestly, like, it's not going to hurt anyone if you're doing compressions on them. Because anything to help will help. And sometimes when you're in the force of the situation, something happens because... especially in adults, I've had many stories and heard of many situations where a rib is broken in the situation because they're pushing so violently, but you want to save the person's life, and it can work. Now, one thing too, so kind of starting off with like the emergency situations, so we talked about CPR. Now, another thing is choking. And this can often happen with young kids because putting things in mouths and things. My mom, she almost had to do this for me because of beads. I like beads so much. Like, I put them in really crazy places. And one time I inhaled one in my nose. Thankfully, it wasn't in my mouth, so I didn't actually choke from it. But it can happen. Any small little objects they want to take and they want to try eating or swallowing, and this can happen. Now, one of the universal signs for choking is when someone's like holding their neck, and you can be like, are you choking? And they may not say anything because they can't, because they're choking. But this is one of the universal signs for choking. They're like, I can't breathe. So depending upon the size, if it's the baby, it's five back, like kind of thrust in a way. So you're going to take, you would take the baby, and the goal is to get the object out of the mouth. So you would gently, you don't want to like choke them even more than they already are, but you're gently surround their head with kind of like a cup. So you're going to take like a C or a smile. You're going to take it and put it around the baby's neck. You're going to kind of hold it in a downward position because anything inside stuck in the throat, you want to come out. So then it can, you could be standing, but sitting is also very effective because then you could have your knee right there, and you're going to take your palm and do five. And then you would flip the baby and with your two fingers again and do five. And you're going to continue five and then flip the baby and do five as you're trying to also stimulate blood flow and air flow because they can't get the air out effectively. They aren't breathing effectively because whatever's in there is blocking. And one important thing to remember is sometimes people often will like try to open the mouth and stick their finger in. Well, that can cause issues. You don't want to do that unless the object's right there. Then you can pop it out. But if you're sticking your finger in, you're probably lodging it further. Now, as the child gets bigger, then it comes the part where you can do the same thing as giving them the five back slaps. But then you're going to actually surround them. So it's like you're giving them a big hug. Interlocking your fists again, and you're going to kind of go underneath by the belly button, and the person can be small or big. You do the same thing, and you're going to kind of go in. You're just pushing in and up, in and up, and you're trying to help stimulate whatever's caught in the respiratory tract to come out. And now, when I've done it a couple times, but one of the times I did it, the lady I did it with was, she was bigger. And so I had, and I'm not super big, so I actually had to use a table. It wasn't a table. I was in the hospital. I had to use a trash can because that was the closest that we were near. So I used anything that was close to me to help kind of stabilize as I was trying to do the thrust. So it's the five back slaps and five thrusts, depending upon whether it's big or small. So again, if it's a baby, you're going to just kind of take it and do the back slaps this way. And as the child gets older, they're probably either standing or sitting. You can do the five back slaps and then the five thrusts. Now, often it's easier if they're standing to do the thrust, but if they're sitting and they slumped over, then you just do it while they're in the chair. So that's the second, like, emergency situation. The third one we're going to talk about actually is kind of involved. We're going to wait on it because it's in here too. So we are now kind of to like the basic medicine guideline page. So we've kind of talked about a few emergency situations. And again, it's being prepared for the unexpected. And as a mom, like, you guys wear so many hats, more than I do, for sure. And sometimes when you're putting on these different hats, you don't know what's going to happen next. And especially being in a different country, things look different and feel different and just may be different. So the way you approach it may be more creative than if you were in somewhere else. So, for example, like when I lived in America, there were different things that I was ready for, knew what it looked like, and knew what a particular rash looked like and how I would treat it. Whereas here, it might look a little different because of the tropical weather, and it's just a different culture, and maybe our skin reacts differently in different places. And so different things may look slightly different, so you may need to use different, just more creativity when you're doing it, and that's okay. That's why it kind of gets back to the importance of prayer. Because ultimately, God is the ultimate healer. And when we have all the questions that we don't know the answers to, he does. And he helps give wisdom and insight for the unknown. And another thing I will say, too, is that, like, we live in a fallen world. And so there are spiritual aspects to health and illness, too. And so sometimes with illness, there can be a spiritual warfare going on. Definitely, there's always spiritual warfare going on. But that's why prayer is so important, because there can be different aspects unexplainable for what's going on as well. Well, explainable with the Lord, that's for sure. So I included a few things about medicines on here because sometimes it gets a little confusing of what to use and when to use it. And sometimes, honestly, there may need to be no medicines, but here, the names are different too. So starting off with, like, if a child has any pain or fever, oftentimes with the pain, you try to remove whatever may be causing them the pain. And sometimes they're like, I don't know what's causing them the pain, so you're just trying to do your best. But with kids, often distraction works very well. So when you come to someone who has pain, you start with the basics, right? You start with, what is causing them to have pain? Can I remove that reason why they're having pain? And with a kid, sometimes distraction works. Let's go play with teddy bears or something. Let's do something else to try to remove that. And if they're too young to, like, explain why they're in pain, because babies can feel pain too. They just express it differently. And so you try to figure out why, and then you go based on that. Now, if you get to the point that you need medicine, because medicine isn't always the first thing you go to. First, prayer, then what's causing the issue. You remove that issue. And if you still need to give them something, for kids, often if it's fever or pain, and they are greater, see, I wanted to get this up on the right one, but if they're greater than 6 months, then you can do, like, ibuprofen, which is also known as Motrin. And I wanted to, like, specify, like, the ages too, because if they're less than 6 months, you don't want to use the ibuprofen because of it affects developmentally in different things. There's something called Reye syndrome, and then and it also affects the liver in a bad way too. So ibuprofen is not the first go-to with that. So if Tylenol is the other alternative, less than 6 months. Now, again, you don't use medication for the first avenue usually, but if they need it, then that's what you would use. So I included some charts, and they're a little small, so I've got them bigger, and I'll send it out so it's bigger too. But the charts help with the dosing too. And kids' medications usually dose better with weight than with age, because kids are different weights. Even if we're all the same age, you can have one kid that's a certain amount of kilo and then another kid that's another amount of kilo. And so you want to give the medicine based on their weight, because that affects how it's absorbed and used in their body. So if you are treating them all the same age, then you could be giving them too much. So you want to go based off of weight. Now, I brought paracetamol here because I also wanted to explain, too, the names are different here of the drugs. Sometimes you'll find it, and it looks different, and they'll have different names when you're looking for it. So for the paracetamol, it's the same as Tylenol. It's acetaminophen. It's the same thing. So, and with ibuprofen, it goes under different names here, too. There's Geofen, there's Buprofen, and then there's a couple of them like that, too, but they're all the same drug. So whenever, like, you're looking for it, I always look for, like, acetaminophen, because it's always written in there somewhere. And the pharmacist is always super helpful, too. They always have the greatest answers to all the questions. So I have on here the guidelines for ibuprofen and then Tylenol, but then also I included Benadryl, too, because Benadryl is one of those ones that those three drugs are probably the most frequently used for kids, especially with Benadryl. It's more for, like, if they're, like, different allergic reactions, or sometimes it can be used for different sensitivities or allergies. And again, medication is not the first line. It is helpful. The Lord gave us medicine, and it's amazing, but it's not the save-all. So Benadryl is on here, too. Now, if you're in different situations, What I liked on this chart, too, is that it shows that sometimes you don't always have the liquid, and you can be creative. So it also explains if you don't have the liquid, but you have either a chewable tablet, which is kid-wise, or you just have the adult-sized pill, it tells you what to do with it. So if you have the adult-sized pill, oftentimes you could cut it in half, and even all three of these medications are totally fine to be crushed. So it's like a little known fact sometimes that they can be crushed and they can be mixed in things. The reason why I know this is I worked with a lot of older people. We had to hide the medication in all kinds of craziest things, like puddings and coffee and orange juice. And so I looked into each of the medications to make sure, like, can I dissolve each of these? Can I crush each of these? And these three are definitely fine to do so. Now, with the Benadryl in particular, if it is crushed, it is going to work a bit faster. So you might want it a little bit smaller amount if you're doing that. So, for example, there was one situation once where I was trying to help a kid, and I didn't have the chewable, I didn't have the liquid. All I had was the adult dose. So you can cut just a little bit off and give to them safely. And crush it safely if they are older than the age of 6. So you do want to be careful too, thinking about the ages. And these guidelines help too, so that you have something to stick with and that you're wanting to treat your kid with the best care as possible too. We are going to kind of move on to our cool first aid kit thing. So on the first page, it talks about a first aid kit. So I made some for you, and a first aid kit can look like anything you want. And as a mom, you are super creative already. I put a basic one together, and you can add stuff to it, because I didn't add any medications just because of cost. So you can add your own thing to it if you want. But in a basic first aid kit, here are a few things it's good to have, but again, you can be creative too. So I've got... In this one, I don't actually have the wipes or hand sanitizer, but it's good to have, always good to keep hand sanitizer on hand, because you never know what situation you'll be in. I did stick gloves in here. Often when you're treating your own kid, I bet you probably don't use gloves, because it's like, it's my kid, and it's okay. But hand sanitizer is always good, some type of disinfectant to keep around. And one thing important with hand sanitizer is it's not just the hand sanitizer itself, it's the friction. Because as you're moving it, you're like, because you can put it on there and it can just come off. We did this one really cool experiment once where it was like a black light type of thing. And so we had to wash our hands. They were kind of checking us to make sure that we washed our hands correctly. But basically what they did was we washed our hands with the soap, and then they looked under to see if we had gotten all the bacteria or not. And they could see based on this black light that had... could highlight the parts of our hands that had bacteria on it. And those that had scrubbed longer and harder, their hands were clean. But those who had used, even though they used soap, but they had just done it for a couple seconds, it's like there was still a lot of bacteria. Now, the thing with it, they say about 20 seconds, that seems like a long time. But you can even sing a song while you're doing it, or as you're doing it, you can be thinking of what's next. But the longer you do it, it is more effective. Now, you might be in emergency situations, so you got to do it quickly, so just do it as hard as you can in the time you have. So, antibacterial, some type of wipes or hand sanitizer. As a mom, you might already have wipes in your car for some reason. If they're a baby, you probably have lots of wipes. And that's super helpful to have with you. Now, I put on there, like, normal saline or a water bottle. You may not naturally keep, like, normal saline with you, but sometimes people think, like, when you've got a cut or something, that you want to, like, cover it in hydrogen peroxide. Well, hydrogen peroxide is not bad. It's good. Or, like, even alcohol or anything, it's good, but it can also disturb the good bacteria, if that can make any sense to you. So your body has both bad and good bacteria. And the bacteria basically... The good bacteria is actually, you do want some of it. It helps kind of regenerate that skin growth, and it has to do with the immunity of your body, too. So the alcohol or hydrogen peroxide, it's not a save-all. It is important to clean and disinfect that area. But honestly, sometimes if all you have is a water bottle, and some gentle soap, that's going to help and be just fine. So if all you have is just a little bit of water, you're getting the blood off and getting that away and scrubbing it gently, that's good. Now, a little bit of alcohol or hydrogen peroxide or iodine is good. They're all, like, have disinfectant properties, or the betadine, iodine, betadine. But you don't need to, like, it's not the save-all. So if all you have is a bottle of water, just clean it as best you can. And if you have a little bit of, like, antibacterial ointment, that's always good to help, too. But you use what you have in the situation. So we've got the water bottle. Then we get to the disinfectant, which we talked a little bit about. It's good to have something like that in there. Now, for the medicines, that's good to have in, like, your little first aid kit. Benadryl's always good because you never know when you might need it. Never know when that, like, the kid might eat something or get a sting or a bite or something that you don't know. You didn't expect it, and it just happens. So you want to have that with you. For the pain medication, having, like, Tylenol or ibuprofen along is always good. And again, whether it's pill form or liquid form, it's good if they're younger to have the liquid with you. But again, if they're a little bit older, they should be able, like, sixth or greater, they should be able to have the pill if you have nothing else. So liquid definitely is preferable for kids because they swallow it easier. They're not used to the big pill. Now, I put something on here that isn't always on in all of them, but sometimes it's helpful to have a cooling patch. This is like a actual ice pack. But they have, even in 7-Eleven, the little cooling patches. And the nice thing about those is sometimes a lot, the common things we have here often are dehydration because it gets the weather and it's so hot and the kid gets uncomfortable. And as a kid, you get dehydrated more quickly, just as your metabolism is faster than an adult and you're often running around more. And often you're probably, as a kid, not thinking of drinking water unless your parent is asking you. So it's easier to get dehydrated. So having, like, a cooling patch and even, like, a rehydration packet in there in your little kit is always important too, because it can help. Even if they're a little uncomfortable in the car, you can just put that on their head and voila. Now, I had the ice pack that you would have to stick in a fridge, but the cooling patch, you don't have to. You just take it off. You could put it, having it in the fridge does make it colder, though, and it works more effectively if you can. But the other things are anti-itch cream and antibacterial cream. Those two creams are probably the most used ones. And here, like, the androgen cream is the hydrocortisone cream. So hydrocortisone is like, it is a steroid, but you don't need much of it, and you just put a little of it on. And it works the same as, like, I know in the States they have, like, Benadryl cream, but it's very similar to that. It's just a slightly different drug in it. So depending on what you have, some type of anti-itch cream, whatever works best for you. But androgen is in all of the stores, and usually it's in a small bottle, too. It's not going to hurt if you use a little bit more, a little bit less. The amount's okay, but you don't need a ton for it to work. Then some type of antibacterial cream. There are lots of different ones, but really you just need a basic one. And one is, like, this one's Bicidal, which is the mupirocin ointment. This one, and they also have the Supiricin, which is the same thing. And any little general antibiotic, antibacterial cream is ointment is good to have, because then you could just put a little on it, whatever cut or wound they have. If it's just like a small paper cut, you don't need it. This is more important for, like, if they really skinned their knee and they were just running and it's, like, been really dirty, it's probably a good idea to put a little bit of antibiotic ointment on it. But if they haven't broken the skin and there's no actual, like, open wound, you don't necessarily need to put the antibacterial ointment on it. Cut. Now, Band-Aids or bandages are good. And as a kid, I think, like, I love Band-Aids. I would cover myself in Band-Aids. Now, it's great during the day because they are running around and they're getting dirty again. So it's good to cover the wound. But at night, if possible, I know sometimes, like, depending on the person, they might be wiggly sleepers. But it's good to keep it open to air, because honestly, for the wound to be able to breathe is super important, because that's part of the healing process of the wound. So keeping the wound open to air is actually important. Now, sometimes it's not as possible, so you're trying to keep it covered because you don't want anything else to happen to it. But keeping it open at some point during the day. So often nighttime is good, or even if it's just an hour in the afternoon, they're just sitting there eating their snack or something. If it's open to air, that's going to help too. Because what tends to happen is if it's covered all the time, is they're starting to sweat. They're getting into more dirt or other fun things, Play-Doh, who knows what's getting under there too. So then that Band-Aid can actually trap some of that stuff too, and it can cause an infection underneath. Now, kids heal quickly. Their immunity, like as they're encountering different things, their immunity is getting stronger. So sometimes it depends on the child, but they may get a little sicker more at the beginning as their immunity is growing and they're encountering these different things. But sometimes people look at sickness with fear or being scared about it, but it actually helps with a kid encountering these different things. It's actually going to grow their immunity. Instead of approaching it with fear, you can approach it with trust in the Lord. It's like he knows, and some of these things are super scary and you may not always have the answers, but he does. So on the last part, I put mom's extra superhero surprises. So it's any extra things you want to stick in your kit. Because again, it can look individual. I put some fun little candies in here to be like distraction, because sometimes they just need something to suck on. And that's for older kids, definitely. I did put like a little ace bandage in here. Often broken bones are very common, or sprains or whatever. So sometimes having different things that help splint different things can be helpful too. So having tweezers or rehydration packets or tissues, different things that you might encounter, because each kid's different. And so you might have something totally crazy happen. And so you might want to stick something else in your kit, and you might want something bigger than a plastic bag. So you just never know what you might encounter. But what we're going to do next is, on the table over there is, I've got the little packets I made for you, but then we're going to actually kind of make some kits together, so that way we can kind of see what, and maybe you're like old hat at this, and that's totally great. Then we can just have fun time fellowshipping together. But that you can see, like, maybe some of these things that you aren't as familiar with, like, what do they look like here? Because for me, like, the medications here look so different, but they're the same thing. It just have a different name. Like even Benadryl is like one of the other names they have here is dibenadryl instead of just Benadryl. So when I was looking for Benadryl, I couldn't find it because I was looking for what I thought would look like. But in closing, before we make our kits, is just a reminder that we want to always start with prayer, to be on our knees and surrender, because often the kid will respond to how you're responding. So if you're responding to the situation with like anxiety and worry, you want to really make sure you're on your knees with the Lord before you're approaching with them, because they're going to respond the same way. They might start screaming or howling, not just because it hurts, but maybe because of your response too. Or just because I think it's the body. Sometimes the response is just the like, your personal response is to be fear or pain too, even if it doesn't. It's like you're making it bigger than it really is. So again, just putting that trust and faith in the Lord, putting on the peace, because as you're approaching the situation with peace, they will too. And if you are like totally freaked out about blood, if it makes you really scared, and you just have to give that to the Lord and pray that he can help you with it, or find someone else if your spouse or someone that can do that part. But sometimes you're put in that situation, and there are different ways that you can do it and approach it with having the blank face towards your kid. But one thing that I found, now I don't mind blood, but some of my coworkers struggled with it, but you can kind of hide your expression by even just covering it up. So if you're like, you have someone that's bleeding a lot, you can kind of cover it up while you're gathering your stuff, and you learn to be very creative with one hand. So finally, the practical preparations that we talked about some emergency situations, and we talked about just some basic things that you can do and the ways you can approach it. But I'm going to go ahead and close in prayer before we make our kits together and just fellowship with snacks and stuff. So let's just pray together. Dear Jesus, I just thank you so much for how big and how great you are, and that you are the all-knowing God, and you have everyone and every situation in your hand, and we just submit that to you, and we just ask for strength and in the unknown, and that we would just trust you walking forward. In Jesus' name, amen.